every time we buy a new brand, one of the first things I do is listen to calls. Just sit and listen to calls. Because if I can understand what's happening on the phone, then it's much more likely I can uncover some missed revenue opportunity that we can impact without having to spend a single more dollar on marketing. Or maybe I can find something we're spending money on that we should just cut out right away because the leads are trash, right? So really, it's like just being in deep with operations. You know, I tell the team all the time that like we should be attached at the hip. Like we can't do it without them. They could probably do it to a certain extent without us, but maybe not as efficient, right? They might spend too much money or not spend enough or not grow as fast as we could help them grow. But
this is To The Point, a Rhino Experience, voted one of the top home services marketing and operations podcasts, cutting through the bullshit and getting to the point.
Hey, what's up, To The Point listeners? It's your boy, Chris, the host of To The Point Home Services Podcast, along with my co-host, Mr. Chatty P, and the place to be, Chad Peterman. What's up, brother?
How are you, sir?
Did you call me sir? How polite.
You know, I always want to treat my my elder co-host with respect.
My gosh. You pulled out the elder comment. Yeah. That's what. Well, my. Okay, listen. Just so you know, I look at that as a sign of disrespect. You know what? And you were raised better than that.
Maybe. yeah, some days I wonder.
Well, I'm excited because I have a guest back on here who actually has been on here before. And I always love it when I have somebody that I've known for a long time. And we have history, and it's cool. That, like, I'm sure it'll come, some of it will come up on here too. But we have Heather McLeod on here, who's no longer the CMO of Authority Brands, but the Chief Growth Officer at Authority Brands. Look at you, girl.
Oh, it's so fancy, right? It's some like McKenzie title change thing that like circulated. So now we all get to be growth officers. It's cool, man. I'll take it. I dig it.
So does Chief Growth Officer still like oversee the marketing, and it's like a kind of marketing and sales all kind of roll into one type of thing, or like how's that going?
Yeah. I mean, it's just like it's a little broader view of the ways to drive revenue in a business, right? So it's not just marketing and growing sales. It's all the other things that you can do to drive revenue. So for us being in the franchise world, that's, you know, getting more franchise locations sold and open. It's how we handle calls that come in, because I think, you know, more than most that the way you handle leads, is a significant driver of revenue, but also things like national accounts and other areas where we can grow and expand that might not be like traditional marketing, but that definitely are things that drive revenue for the business.
Yeah. I think what's always cool about our conversations over the years is like, you try to like, you're a very innovative person too. You're trying to be like a first out, you know, a first to the front of, you know, a leader in the market with any of the new things. And I've always felt like I've been the same, you know, trying to be the first one to come out with this stuff. There's such a major advantage to being that person who's willing to take those risks and try the new things. So I mean, you were in the digital marketing game for a long time, just like I back in your like neighborly days, which was Dwyer day. And you were on the Mr. Reuter side of things, right? Which is where our first contact happened.
I know. I had to yell at you for doing something outside of our brand standards. I know, right? Isn't that funny how that works? And here I was like 26. I had no clue, you know. I'm like, what is this guy doing? I was like, I don't think we should be doing that. Yeah. But I think you're right though. It just goes back to like pushing on the gas and like trying to find new ways to do things and generate revenue. And my perspective has changed a little bit over the years as I've gotten more, you know, spent more time with our owners in local markets, got a better feel for what really drives the business forward. And, you know, my perspective has grown and developed as I've spent more and more and more time in the trades.
You were way more of a hard ass then. You're way easier.
I know. I didn't know any better, right? It was rules, right? I was like, this is the rule I got. And now I'm like, ooh, let's break it. Let's push harder. Let's see what we can do. That's just the way it was for me back then.
Yeah, man, you had like an axe to grind here. It was go time. I'm going to show you what I got. I'm going to show you who I am. I'm 26. Sit down. So real quick, for all of our listeners who don't know Authority Brands, I want to give a little clarity to it. Like Heather was saying, Schwartz with a lot of the franchise, but they have a lot. I think it's like 16. I think, does the Authority Brand have 16 franchises now?
So 16 brands, yeah.
I'm gonna read off a few of I'm actually gonna read them off just for our listeners so they can kind of hear and relate to the awesome. Different the variations, because yes, we have trade brands, but there's also some outside of the trade brands. So we have Cleaning Authority, which is we will get into a little bit of that with you in the earlier days with Cleaning Authority.
Yeah.
America's swimming pool company. I met him. Actually, he was on the podcast, I want to say, in 2020 at one point.
What was Stuart?
Stuart, yeah. Great dude.
Oh, yeah. I love me some Stuart Vernon. Great guy. Mayor of Macon, Georgia, right there.
Oh, that's it. Yeah. Got he was awesome. He was awesome.
Yeah, he's great.
Mosquito Squad, Home Watch Caregivers, 1 Hour, Ben Franklin, Mr. Sparky, Monster Tree Service, Stop Restoration, Duty Calls, Color World House Painting, Woofies, which you have a little bit of experience with Woofies.
I do.
And then Dry Medic Restoration, Junk Lugger, Screen Mobile, and Lawn Squad.
That's the list.
Okay, I don't think I missed anything. I think that's it.
No, you didn't miss any. You got awesome. Them all.
Okay, perfect. So now you understand what she is the chief growth officer of.
All those things. It's a lot of things.
Just a few things. No pressure.
No brands, you know, in a
super easy market. Like, yeah, I get it. So last time you were on was September of 2020. Yeah, you've had quite the transformation since then, and you've had quite the growth trajectory still since then. You think about what things have been like for you on the Authority Brand side in that time frame, Gina, now.
So, I mean, we were coming out of COVID then, right? 2020.
That's right. Whew. That's right.
Those were some dark days for some of the brands, right? Like house cleaning. All of a sudden, nobody wanted anybody in their house anymore, right? And then some of the other brands exploded during COVID. So it was a mixed bag. But that's kind of what happens when you've got a business like ours with 16 different verticals, right? Like not everybody has a great year the same year. Not everybody has a bad year the same year. So there's a little bit of balance to be had in that.
Nice. It's kind of like having HVAC and adding plumbing and electrical.
Kind of like that, isn't it? Yeah.
So, but one thing has not changed about you. One thing has not changed about Heather, and that is that she is a diehard Baylor fan. Doesn't matter. Basketball, football, you name it. I mean, and she will fight you over it.
I know. If you could see the other side of my office, it's the Baylor side because I want to look at it all the time. So I got my clock, I got my blanket. And since that last podcast, Baylor men's basketball team, national championship.
And lucky for you, someone from Indiana is your head coach.
Gotta love it. Yep. I love me some Scott Drew.
Full circle.
Great dude.
Yep.
Yep.
All roads lead back to Indiana.
That's right.
America, the heartland of America. Heartland.
Absolutely.
Heartland of America. So, I remember when we were talking before podcast, I was talking to Chad, and he's like, yep, you got some Indiana there down there. That's what helped him win.
Along with some really good players, too.
Yeah, great players, great coach, you know. He's from a great coaching family, right? His dad was a great head coach.
Yep. So. Valparaiso, right there in great northern Indiana, the region.
The region rats, Valpo. Okay. All right, nobody gives a shit about this. I just want to bring that up. So sorry about that for derailing us, listeners.
Plenty of Baylor people give a shit about that, just for the record.
But, you know, in comparison, like, now we're only going to talk about the Purdue Boilermakers, okay? We're going to talk about it. So, but not about football, just basketball. Okay, so let's jump into this real quick. So here's what I wanted to do. And the whole reason I wanted to, you know, to have you on is, from that 2020 phase, and you kind of talked about how some of the different brands experienced different things in those moments. Some, you know, did fantastic and some didn't. Well, you... and the CMO role at that time, like you had to pivot and try things and you have a lot of responsibility. And I think the hardest part about your role then, and even now, is, you know, all these brands have many franchisees who are out there just trying to make it happen, right? And get things done. And when they're looking for help, you know, part of joining that is that you have those roadmaps, you have the help, the vetted help to be able to be successful in your business. So they're looking up and trying to find out where, like, what do we do now? Like what? So, you've been through a whole other layer of your professional experience and personal. It affects you personally too, but just your professional career of like having to overcome quite a bit and then also get creative and try things. And to me, it's always interesting, you know, anytime you and I sit and have a conversation, if we're having lunch or we get together or a phone call, whatever it is, like that's the part I love the most is we're always talking about like different tactics, strategies, things like that.
Yeah, and just, for sure.
And you can be real with one another and be like, yeah, I tried this, sucked. This is what I think. So I just want to kind of have that like same combo, you know, conversation here.
Let's do it.
So, you know, one thing that I think I was listening to, I can't remember which podcast it was, but it was a podcast. You were talking about your time at Cleaning Authority when you were like digitizing the booking experience.
Yeah.
Right. So, and you know, somebody wants, you know, someone to come clean their house. They can see what the cost is and book right then. Like, and you were an early adopter, you know, an early adopter to that. So, you know, we're going to talk trade talk. Okay. Trade stock. I'm curious to know, and I know Chad will have some input on this as well. From your view and your experience, how far out do you think that we really are from that type of service in, let's call it HVAC, catching on? Like, hey, yeah, I'm going to pick this good, better, best unit, boom, this one, and then that contractor goes and installs it. But the whole booking process is actually happening online, e-commerce. Like, let's just call it e-commerce. Like, you know, from your perspective, I'm not sure how many of these conversations you've had. I'm sure you've had to have had them, though, in the trade space. But, like, from your perspective, how far out do you think that is? I've been hearing it for years. For years I've had these conversations and I don't know where it is. Do I think it's getting closer? I do think it's getting closer. I just don't know how realistic, you know, that is. Like, what are you seeing? What's conversations you've had around that experience?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's an interesting one, right? Because I think it's a really different type of purchase when you're talking about the difference between somebody who wants to get their house clean and someone who doesn't want to buy a new HVAC system, right? So like there's a very different dynamic of pricing and complexity that exists in the trades. Oftentimes people can't self-diagnose. They have no clue what's really going on, right? So trying to purchase something to solve a problem that you either don't know what the problem actually is or you really don't want it to be what the problem actually is. So I think what we're going to see more of is just a more kind of fully rolled out booking of service call. So like the actual booking of a technician with the right skill set to be able to properly diagnose what's happening across an HVAC issue, a plumbing issue. You know, and there's a lot of that already happening. But I think that that's probably for now, I think is, I hate to say as good as we're going to get, because I think there really is in the last 20 years in HVAC, I mean, the amount of amazing sales training that's happened and like the quality of sales technician, I think is absolutely out of control. Like it's amazing. It blows my mind how like great some of these guys are and gals at going into the home and doing like a consultative sale. I think it's going to be really hard in the space to have that concept of like, I'm going to go and purchase my own system and you're just going to come and install it, because there's too many variables that I don't understand or I might choose to disagree with that put me in a bad spot, right? Oh, my house is this big, but I don't really need that. I need this other unit, right? Like, so I think it just gets a little messy. So I don't know that we'll ever quite get there, but I think there probably is a ton of predictive automation that could help us identify when systems are going to break before they do, or when systems are going to need maintenance before they do, that smart companies and individuals could leverage a little more than we are today. But I have a really hard time making the jump to like somebody like me, no offense, who's worked in the space for a very long time, but like I'm the last person you want deciding like what system I need in my house. It sounds like a terrible, terrible idea. I'd shortchange it all the time, right?
Yeah. One of the things I'll add to that, one of the things we're testing right now is like a combination of the two. So I liked the e-commerce, but I'm with you, Heather. I didn't see where like I could trust somebody that doesn't know much about it to like click eight buttons and it present a system. And I was at a moving company, one of the largest moving companies in the country, and I watched their process. Now, again, it's a moving quote, but what they did was they took them on a journey to select all of the different things that they would need to consider when getting a moving quote. And then once they click submit, it flipped right over to their call center. And so right now on our tech turnover leads, we do the probably 80% of them virtually, where the sales rep is sitting in our office and selling right over Zoom. What we're trying is, can we combine the two where we take and you go through a buying journey and educate yourself, and then it flips right over to a representative that then can then talk you through that decision. So it's kind of like a mix, but using technology from a bunch of different angles. I would definitely agree with you on the booking of calls, like service calls and stuff like that. Like, to me, that's our biggest source of, hey, go online, tell us what the problem is. It pulls from our capacity boards and you can book a call today or tomorrow or whenever's convenient for you. So I think there's a lot of, from the technology piece, yeah, I'm still a little bit skeptical on if you can buy it whole meal deal by clicking a bunch of buttons and submitting your credit card. But I think there may be some other steps, because I would agree it's a complex purchase. I don't want to be that guy who says it can't be done, but there are some things to consider for sure.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you this. So I love just seeing what other people are doing. I'm not like spying on everybody. Let's just get that straight. But we have a condo in Florida. Our system was, oh my God, I don't know, 40 years, some crazy amount of years old, right? So my boyfriend started the process of like, yeah, I put this all on him. Like, you're dealing with this. But I said, everybody you call, I want them to tell you my system isn't working and it's 35 years old. Because in my mind, like anyone who takes that call or gets that in a booking that comes online, I would expect them to immediately be prioritizing that like system replacement, right? Like, this is screams, like, jump on that. Like, it hasn't been replaced since it was built in, you know, whatever year, but it's old. And so it's gonna likely be new. I think he reached out to 13 or 14 different companies. We only ended up having two of them who actually gave us a quote. Like, didn't call back, didn't answer the phone, didn't follow up. And it's blowing my mind, because I'm like, oh, we're beyond that as an industry now, right? Like, we've beat that in for so long that this is like such a thing. And like, it's such a key thing for us and with our franchisees. Like, they know that like that lead is, that's money. That's money. Like, it's literally opportunity. And I was just blown away by how challenging it was to actually get quotes for a new system. I couldn't believe it. I was shocked.
Like, well, so am I, because like, don't know, maybe I'm stating the obvious, but to me, like, that's what you're looking for. That's the holy grail lead right there. Cause it's an install. It's a whole, yeah. The odds are of it being, you know, a change out is pretty damn good.
It was February.
Oh, so you had it on top in Florida.
In Florida.
Yeah. So you had that on top of it. Like, it's not like
it wasn't July.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's February.
Yeah.
So anyway, I think it's interesting. So yeah, I think there's all kinds of things that are more likely to be automated and sold without interaction, if you will. But I think a lot of it is things more so related to like filters, or like, can we automate drop shipping certain things to people? You know, can we automate getting maintenance agreement visits set, things like that? I think it's going to be really challenging to try and fully automate selling equipment, but there's probably some that can. Like maybe we're at the point where, you know, people know enough about certain things that we could do it.
Yeah.
But I think it's going to be a challenge. I'd love to see somebody do it though. Yeah. I'd love to see the person who figures it out. Because I think it's interesting. So then like, what do you do with how do you incentivize or what do you do with your technicians? Right. Like that kind of changes the model a little bit. It's almost like the car dealership model. Like I bought my last car on the internet. Like I built it. I found the dealership that had it. I called them. I paid for it. I showed up and picked it up.
Yeah.
But it's a different model for car salespeople, you know?
Yeah. I think the one question I have for you, Heather, is one that we talk about a lot here. And I think it goes back to our what we were just talking about with technology is sometimes you can make it too complicated. It's like, just do the basics and you'll win. How do you balance kind of your role being kind of in charge of marketing, knowing that there's so many operational aspects that affect your marketing? I know Chris and I talk about it all the time. It's like, I can drive you all the leads you want, but if you can't book a call to save your life, I don't know how to help you. How do you kind of balance that dynamic, especially with working with so many brands and so many different kind of owners of franchises? How do you go about that?
Sorry for the interruption. To the point, listeners, have you heard of Rilla? Are you using Rilla yet? If not, are you for Rilla? See what I did there? Rilla is the leading speech analytics software for the trades. It is on a mission to bring physical ride-alongs to an end. You can coach your reps with virtual ride-alongs now. They're 100 times better, faster, and much more efficient than the physical ones. All you got to do is use the Killa Rilla. That's R-I-L-L-A, Rilla.
Hey, Chad Peterman here. I've been all in on Blue-on for quite a while now, and it's not just me. Contractors all over are seeing similar results. Tony at Just-In-Time Heating says their support calls dropped immediately once they rolled it out. His techs get reliable answers from Blue-on's AI faster than what they get from the OEMs. And their parts guy, he's loving it too. It's made his job way easier. They're saving time, solving problems quicker, and feeling more confident in the field. Blue-on's just become part of the process. And yeah, Peterman Brothers is definitely seeing that impact too. Click the link in the description and book a quick demo. You'll get it.
Man, I am like a back to basics kind of girl. Like, so Chris and I first bonded over like listening to phone calls, right? So like, I want to listen to calls. I want to understand what's happening on the call. I want to understand what's happening when that lead gets to the location. Do we have like all of the things related to capacity and demand, like all of those little levers that move through kind of the funnel of lead to booked revenue? I want to understand all of those. What types of leads does the team like or not like, and why? Which ones are driving the most revenue, right? It's like you have to have a really deep, I think, to be a really good marketer, you have to have a really deep operational understanding. You don't necessarily have to know how to do the work, but you need to understand what types of leads drive the most revenue, which ones are the most valuable, which ones do the guys want or not want. You know, it's just like all those nuances, right? Because leads are easy to drive. It's leads that book to revenue. That's really what the game is, right? It's maximizing that and minimizing how much we're spending to get those leads. So every time we buy a new brand, one of the first things I do is listen to calls, just sit and listen to calls. Because if I can understand what's happening on the phone, then it's much more likely I can uncover some missed revenue opportunity that we can impact without having to spend a single more dollar on marketing. Or maybe I can find something we're spending money on that we should just cut out right away because the leads are trash, right? So really it's like just being in deep with operations. You know, I tell the team all the time that like we should be attached at the hip. Like we can't do it without them. They could probably do it to a certain extent without us, but maybe not as efficient, right? They might spend too much money or not spend enough or not grow as fast as we could help them grow. But we have to be locked in at the hip and we have to listen to what they're telling us about, you know, what they're seeing and feeling. And then we have to look at the data and understand what's actually turning into revenue.
I have a question I was going to ask a little bit later, but it kind of works now. A couple of things. Yes, we bonded over the phone calls. I think the respect of being in charge of marketing for me, being in charge of marketing, but also in charge of sales at Rhino pre-acquisition, you pay attention to both those things, right? Like, my marketing efforts only as good as the sales process and the bookings and those things. And they're only as good as the opportunity that we're bringing into them. So there is that, you know, that balance. And when you get put in a CMO role, which is the role I am in now, I'm grateful. I know that whole process. So I can like find out who's bullshitting me and who's not to make sure my marketing effort is or is not good. You know, based on like, yes, these are coming in. You're not booking them. Is it really a me problem or is it a booking problem or is it a sales problem? You know, so at least we can identify those things. I think that's being a really good, that's probably really why what the chief growth officer role really is, you know, managing that whole process in addition to finding opportunity and ways to, you know, to do new things for the different brands. But I want to ask this question. Actually, this is going to be a two-parter. Okay. I wrote it down. So I didn't forget.
So look at you.
Literally going to read it right off of my paper. So I don't forget it. But, I believe, like, I'm completely convicted that there's a new era of digital marketing, that's happening right now, like a whole new era of it. I've been through like a couple, you know, in my 17 years of working, doing digital marketing for the trades. Like, I've seen a few swings and watched how things have progressed or changed. But would you agree that like right now there's a new, like, let's start there. Do you think that what I just said is true? There is a new era of digital marketing right now.
I think that more than I've ever seen in 15 years, there used to just be an advantage to spending on digital, right? Like, there were plenty of people who weren't for a very long time. Now, between demand cycle issues, cost issues, all of that, it is much more challenging. It's much more expensive, and you have more people at the table with a fork trying to eat. So it's definitely a different dynamic than I've seen in the past.
Got it. So, and it's more competitive. There's more, yep, like, you got to pay attention to, you know, things like Google changes, you know, have been happening, and it's like, which is not really, it's the part of the normal process of being in digital marketing. It's just different. It's different right now. And so the second piece of this is where, what I've been chasing. So if you disagree, then we are disconnected, but I don't think you're going to disagree with this one.
I love the setup, right? Like, I don't think you're going to get, but if you do, okay.
I think I know you well enough to know your answer to this, because we are kind of in the same boat. I'm just giving you the out in case you want the out. But
thank you.
Would you also agree or disagree that the traditional marketing company can no longer just offer lead generation? Like, you can't just stop with lead generation if you want to be an elite agency.
Dang. Yes. I mean, you can, but I don't think you're going to be at the top of the pack. Right. That's so right. I think more than ever, you have awareness from contractors, small business owners, large business owners, right, who are spending on marketing, who have started to realize, right, and you've always had people who get this, but more than ever, right, that leads are an inflatable number that doesn't necessarily directly correlate to revenue. And unless you're paying attention to revenue, I don't think you're an elite agency, period. I don't think you're an elite marketer. And I would say that for my giant team too, right? Like, our job is to do the things that drive revenue. If that means leads go up or down, that's just a diagnostic tool, right? That's to help me figure out and help the team figure out what we're doing that's working and not working. All those KPIs in between are just a way to understand what's happening. If, you know, the most simplistic example, right, is if you start spending somewhere, does the pie get bigger or does it stay the same and the slices look different? I don't really care if, you know, that's the thing that's always the biggest frustration point for me is the attribution fight. Like, oh, well, you're spending on digital and you're spending on, you know, this other channel, you know, direct mail or whatever it might be. And the pie stayed the same, but now you've got somebody taking a bigger claim to a bigger slice. Like, that's useless to me. Like, the pie needs to get bigger, right? Like, that's the most basic kind of thing to be looking at. So I would say if you're not tying directly to revenue, if you can't prove you're driving revenue, you're never going to be elite.
Yeah, got it. And by the way, if you're sometimes our competitors will listen to this. I'm not saying you're not going to be successful. I'm just saying, you know, you need to think bigger than just lead generation. It makes you a better partner because now you kind of get to 100%. Help the operational side of it as well. And I know that, you know, Chad with Peterman Brothers is also the same. Like they're doing far more than just lead generation. It's tracking the whole process, paying attention to which ones are the more successful leads. I think you can even go down to who needs to run a particular lead based on its, you know, the cost per lead. Like, you want your best person on it. So the reason I was asking that question is, you know, as I think through like this new era of digital marketing, is I've always tried to build out, like, tried to figure out one is, does this process work? And then how can I automate this on behalf of the contractor to make it easy for them to implement? Like, there's gotta be an easy button too. Not with all, like, sophisticated contractors, like, you know, Chad's company or some of the companies of his size, different conversation. Like, most of the time they've kind of got their, you know, blocking and tackling on point and they've got somebody to take lead on that stuff. But the majority do not. The majority. So you have to find like a way to make it easy for them. And by me saying, hey, you need to be the elite marketing agency, doesn't mean you only work with the elite. I'm just saying you need to put yourself in a position to where you can be a good partner like that to any contractor. So if I'm going to generate an air conditioning repair lead, I want to be able to chase that thing all the way through to who booked it, listen to the call, give them a CSR assessment. They need call coaching or CSR coaching. Cool. We'll send our CSR coach in to help them if they don't have a coach. Did they sell it or not sell it? If they sold it, cool. You attach that revenue right back to the PPC lead that it came in from, or SEO or whatever the lead channel is. If they didn't book it, well, there's another metric. But if they did book it, proposed it, and it didn't close, well, then it goes into a completely different bucket. And Chad and I've had this conversation. One of our sponsors is Chirp, and Chirp is something that helps with kind of go back after that. Some automated things that goes back after that lead that's been sitting to help, you know, go get the revenue that you proposed but didn't close. But a lot of contractors forget to go back and attach that to the lead, like the actual where the lead had come from. So the lead attribution is still like, yes, they said it came from PPC, but it didn't close. Well, it didn't close yet. Yeah. Right. So you do have to look at the whole thing. Like, so I'm not saying you don't, like, you still got to pay attention to the cost per lead, right? Like, what PPC, SEO, social, OTT, whatever it is. You know, and like right now, perfect example, you know, Chad and I launched a Redbird roofing company, you know, in Indianapolis, and we're spending some bucks on marketing, like pretty good dollars. I'm trying to measure everything, you know, just to make sure I know from the OTT ads, like what's coming from the OTT ads, and all the way down to at the end of the day, like we had a meeting yesterday. All we care about is like, one, did it work? Two, what do we do with it? Three, what's the end result and what's the follow up? Yeah, but yeah. To me as an agency, like that's me being a good partner now, a marketing partner. You have to step up the game and do it for the contractor so it's easy to make a decision fast. And here's the last piece of it. So how can I make that as real time as possible? I want that to be real time. Well, now because of automation, AI, things like that, like with ServiceTitan, you can easily tie into their into the CRM and have the data immediately pull and push right into this real-time dashboard so we can make decisions now. And Chad was talking about his call board. You got a three-day call board and you can see your light on the three-day call board. and you need more service calls, well, then it should automatically start utilizing your paid services to go after service calls. To me, that's an elite agency. So that's what I've been working so hard on this like last year and a half, was like, how can I do all of those things? Not just paid ads, not just SEO, not just social, whatever, like wherever I need to pull in business from, and how am I tracking it? So it's clear to Chad exactly what it costs to get a lead from PPC, how they're performing on it, the average ticket that's attached to it, like all the things that we need to be able to make this a predictable model going forward. That's, to me, what it takes to be an elite agency today, and really with any industry, but specifically in my world with the trades.
Yeah. No, I mean, I definitely agree. I think the two other things that are always on my radar when I'm looking at data on how we're performing is the 90-day look back, right? Like, it's great to know revenue right out the gate, but what happens over time, right? Because sometimes the cycle is a little longer. Sometimes it takes a little bit longer for that revenue to flow through, to your point, whether it's sold and then it takes a while for it to actually invoice and pay, or it, you know, is someone who's spent 2 weeks running around getting quotes from a bunch of people before we actually did the work. But then the other piece too, that I think oftentimes gets ignored or overlooked, is the percentage of revenue that's from the existing customer base when you're spending on a marketed channel. Like, I always like to know if it's like what the proportion is of new customer revenue attached to marketing. Because if I'm spending paid dollars to just bring in a customer who's already a customer, then that's a sign to me that, you know, maybe I don't have enough stickiness in my existing customer base, because they shouldn't be going through a PPC ad. They can. I don't like that. I would rather they not. But like, just knowing that metric, a lot of times people don't pay attention to whether or not the revenue was actually on a captive previous customer. And that can make a really big difference too, because, you know, there's other ways to try and capture that revenue that are much cheaper than spending on PPC and other, you know, paid digital sources that we just said are more expensive and more competitive than ever. So like, I think making sure you've got, you know, all the great database work that you should have happening in the background all the time. Making sure that you've got a strategy on getting your phone number saved in people's smartphones, like all of those little things that are just such a different cost structure, so that you don't end up with one of your paid channels being 50% existing customer revenue.
Heather, I got a question for you as it relates to kind of the budgeting. I think you made a great point there of looking at your marketing. Is it actually bringing in new customers, or are you just, you know, running a TV ad so that your customer who's been your customer for 10 years sees you and says, I saw you on TV. How would you recommend to a contractor to set a budget? So, you know, I've heard all these different things. You need to be spending 10% of revenue, or 12 or 8 or whatever the number is. How do you recommend, if I'm a contractor, should I set my marketing budget? Should I look at new customers? Should I look at them combined? How would you instruct someone to do that?
In home services, speed to lead is everything. Chirp stands out by transforming your communication strategy. With Chirp, accelerate your lead response time with instant SMS text messaging, email, and ringless voicemail automation. Chirp's cutting-edge technology ensures you're the first and the most persistent, helping you close more deals than ever. But that's not all. Say goodbye to missed opportunities with Chirp's incredible follow-up system. Keep your leads engaged and moving smoothly through your sales funnel without lifting a finger. And with Chirp, deep integrations with top CRMs like ServiceTitan, HouseCall Pro, and Jobber, you can launch laser-targeted campaigns to connect with the exact right leads at the exact right time. Automation creates efficiency. Efficiency unlocks scalability. With Chirp, you can automate speed to lead, estimate follow-ups, rehash, abandoned call follow-ups, canceled job follow-ups, review requests, outbounding to your list, annual reminders, membership expiration follow-ups, and so much more. So stop chasing leads, capture them, connect faster, and close more deals with Chirp. Contact Chirp today and elevate your communication game. What if your customers could get instant estimates for HVAC systems, water heaters, or generators right from your website? With Contractor Commerce, companies like Peterman Brothers and over 100 Nexstar members are selling online 24/7. No coding, no hassle, just easy. It's built for contractors. It offers instant system quotes. You can launch a touch-free filter subscription and build real recurring revenue. Capture customers while they are researching and take them off the market for your competitors. If you're a Rhino client, setup is seamless. Over 100 Rhino clients have used Contractor Commerce before it was even popular. Get set up with e-commerce on your existing website today. Visit ContractorCommerce.com. That's ContractorCommerce.com to get started today.
Yeah, so in our, to set the stage a little bit, so we are franchised, but we also own and operate our own locations in the trades. So I'll talk about how my team sets budgets there. It's a lot easier when you have historical data. So this would not necessarily be the solution I would offer if you're year one. But if you've been in business and you have, you know, historical data on how your marketing has performed, that's always the easiest place to start, is we do a bottoms up. So we would start with whatever our revenue target is for next year. And that might be aggressive. And we might have, you know, 20%, 30% growth budgeted in. We would go back and say, okay, in order to get the call volume we need, and we know what percent marketed leads attribute to that for us, right? And that's probably different for everybody, but let's just say for easy math, it's 50%. So if we need to be responsible for generating 50% of that revenue through working our customer base and 50% through new marketed customers, then we look at all of our channels where we're spending and what our costs are and set our budget that way. So if we know that a new customer that we get from a certain channel costs us $150, well, how many of those can we get? And then what's the next bucket? And what's the next bucket? And we start with our best performing channels, and then we work our way through to the ones that maybe aren't the best performing. But that's how we set our budget. So it's basically a bottoms up build to say, if we're chasing this top line revenue, here's what we need in marketing. And I will say, in the last year and a half or so, using percent of revenue doesn't work so great anymore. We in the past would have said maybe 7 to 8% of revenue. And on a business that's probably, I don't know, 120 million or so, but got a little, stretched. We got a little closer to 11% for a while there. But for us, the decision was to chase the top, right? That we wanted to get the top line growth, knowing that we could get efficiency probably over time again on what that percentage is. So I always like to do it that way, to start with the number you're trying to get. Use the historical on what you've seen on acquisition. Don't assume you have to get 100% of it. If you know what is coming from your customer base, I would say you can probably push on that to try to do an extra 5% via your existing customer base year over year, especially as your customer base continues to grow. And then look at what your actual historical is, and maybe add a little bit of a percentage increase in cost after what we've seen in the last year or two.
Yeah, no, I appreciate you sharing that. That the one thing I took from that was, once you figure out what that split is from your existing to your new ones that you need to bring in, it's like, and you pointed out earlier, you know, monetizing your existing customer base is a hell of a lot cheaper, or there's cheaper means to do it. So it's like, well, how do I shift that? To, can I get 55 or 60% from my new customer or from my existing customer base? And then my percentage, then I can drive my percentage of new customer acquisition potentially down, is the one thing I took from kind of what you said, which I think is awesome.
The number one reason people don't come back isn't because they had bad service. It's because they don't remember who you are.
Yeah, that's good.
It's just a fact, right? I mean, that's why for so long, everyone stickers everything, right? You put a sticker on the unit, you try to get your phone number saved, you try to stay top of mind with, you know, TV and radio and all of those things, right? And we've seen, and Chris, you probably have better stats on this than me, but we've seen some shifts in brand. Like, branded search in general isn't what it used to be. And why is that? I don't know. I would maybe argue that we're constantly bombarded, and so we only remember the things we think we need to remember. Everything else we know, we can go look up if we need to go look it up, right? So yeah, I mean, I think that's probably the biggest area just in general where companies could be more efficient from a marketing perspective is just trying to maximize the revenue they get out of their existing customer base.
Yeah, that was awesome. You know, I believe in the bottom up approach. I don't think I've ever thought through splitting the two. Cause you know, it seems like a perfect example would be if if Chad came to me and said, "Hey man, I need, you know, to," my question would be to him, "Hey, what kind of lead volume do you need me to go after this year for service, install, drain cleaning? Like, what is it?" Cause they've got the metrics to figure out kind of based on whatever their growth is that they want to have in that year. We'll work that backward, and where does that land in regards to lead volume? And I can build a marketing campaign based off of that number. It may go up or down or fluctuate a little bit, but at least we got, like, you know, we have a good baseline to go after, a plan. But the key ingredient that you were talking about there that I want all the listeners, you know, to hear, and what I also believe truly sets apart a good marketing partner, is new, like a new the job is new customers. Like, so if it's 60% growth or 50% growth is going to come from existing 50%, well, I'm responsible. Like I have partial responsibility depending on what other marketing channels you have in hitting that 50% number or whatever it is. The only way we know is if all the lead volume that's coming through, you know, like Chad does a ton of radio, TV, billboards, whatever, like the branding is on point. And they may land in digital. Like they may land on the internet or whatever. But his existing customer base is so massive. Like the memberships are so massive that yes, they still are coming through. Well, I can't take credit for that. It's not my customer, but it still happens. Like I've fought this battle for years. What is a lead? To me, a lead is a new bookable, you know, service or installation lead that was not a past customer, not a referral, like a legit brand net new customer. That's what I'm being paid to do and to generate. And then I need to track the metrics on that. I'm getting all the leads. So you just have to classify them, repeat, customer, referral customer, whatever it is. But I have to track the new leads. So that way, one, I can hold my own team accountable to their KPIs, you know, on how are they performing for an individual contractor. Then Chad has absolute clarity on, okay, I know that it takes me $250 for cost per acquisition on this drain cleaning lead. That would be awesome. On this drain cleaning lead, you know, and if I need 50 more of those, I just do the math, right? Because the variable to this is, you know, what's the booking rate on it? What's the close rate? Like you have those two pieces to the formula that you need to know to make sure to make the math work, but it's all there to do. It's all there if you book it the correct way. So you generate the lead, you separate repeat from new, and you measure on both the cost per lead on both, the conversion rates on both, the cost per acquisition on both, like all of the above. And you have the playbook, like you have the numbers to make the decisions. And though it might not be dead nuts on, it'll be pretty damn close. And the other piece, you know, to your point on this branding thing that you're just talking about, branded leads, let me tell you why I think there's also a variation in this too. You think back to when the 2020 stuff happened and how much brand mattered then, right? Like it was a magnifying glass on, man, I hope to God you had good brand equity, because those are the ones that really, you know, because they had the trust. If I had to call somebody to come in, brand equity was a big deal, you know, and it helped, you know, you bring in more business. Well, I think it shined a light on to all businesses, but how's your brand in the market? How's your brand equity in the market? And people started taking action. One, I really need to improve my brand. So now I've got 21, 22, 23, and now through 24 of people who've been hammering on their brand, paying way more attention to their brand, to their business. So I think we're seeing a little bit of delusion come in from that too. Like, you know, so I think some of that stuff is happening. People are getting better on their brand game.
Yeah, I think, you know, to circle back to kind of the budgeting conversation we were talking about earlier, the other thing that I don't think people talk about enough, because it's real, you can test it. I don't know that we would want to, but you can. If you turned off all your marketing, everything, if you shut everything down, you wouldn't go to zero. Like there is still a volume that you would continue to get even without marketing. You can attribute that to brand or past brand work, right? If you've run a ton of radio in market, you can assume that like that's going to stick around for a while. But like there's a certain amount of work that just comes, right? That doesn't get a lot of credit for a lot of anything, right? So there's also like when you're thinking about budgeting, like there's some of those things that like you don't have to hunt every single new customer. If you want 1,000 in a time period, right? Like they don't all have to come from marketing. There's certain things that can come from other places. But normally we kind of just give like, to your point, Chris, about like, it's so important and that you guys focus on like, let's label things accurately. You shouldn't be letting your agency take credit for everything that's happened in the past, because everything that's happened in the past is what that maybe 15 or 20% of business that will continue to come in based on past work. Like we kind of refer to that in our universe as like, we'll call that like mainline calls, but like it's a phone number that we've had forever. It's plastered on stickers all over the universe. And if we turned everything off tomorrow, we would still get calls on that phone line. They would continue to come in. Now, we would start to shrink. No doubt about that. But like there's a lot of, you know, past behavior and past, you know, marketing that influences calls in the future, especially in spaces like the trades where there is a lot of brand awareness activity that happens. There's a lot of TV that gets run in this space, way more than a lot of others. You watch, you know, morning news and you see it, right? In any market you're in, you will see HVAC and plumbing advertised during the weather on local morning shows, right? Like it's just part of it, right? So I think to the point earlier about elite, right? Like what does it mean to be elite? The agency partners you're picking, whether digital or otherwise, should absolutely be accountable to driving actual revenue coming from new customers, period. They shouldn't be taking credit for calls that are coming in that would have come in otherwise. They shouldn't be taking credit for existing customers in your database who are re-engaging. Like it should be net new. And I think too often that gets kind of sloppy. And if they're really a strong agency, that's how they should be thinking about it. And that's how your marketing team locally should be thinking about it too.
Bingo. That was a good one. Let's go ahead and clip that sucker just so everybody knows.
Thanks, man.
Over and over again. I'm just so passionate about that piece of it because I've fought it forever. Like
I am too. There's too many not great marketers. Like, and that's, I don't mean to like disparage my space, but like a really strong marketer really wants to drive revenue. And to do it, you have to know what those drivers are and you have to pull on the lever you can impact with marketing.
And you have to be
take credit for everything else.
Yeah. And you have to be willing to like be open to eat shit one month if it didn't go the way that you planned. I think that honesty goes a long way, because if you lose trust, it's game over. But
yeah,
if
exactly.
You just measure all the facts, it takes all the feeling out of the way. That's one piece. But it's got to be the facts. Of you said net new, like that's the term I'm using. Like I just, you know, I'm responsible for net new business. That's my job. I got to do a good job at it. Also, I got to be honest. When the market changes, that's my job. I got to go and fight the market and figure out how to do it. And I'm willing to do it. I've always stepped up and done it. But you know, it's the only way I've known to survive in this space for so long, in the same space for so long, was to just try to keep being innovative and just try to be as transparent as you possibly can with the tools that I have, which is why I've got 80 people listening to phone calls here in the US, you know, just to make sure that I know for a fact that the quality was good, that the CSR did their job and that it got booked and I can attribute that thing down. Like forever I've been doing it. I am so ready for AI to pick up intent on calls properly. So that way, yeah. I can use that instead of having to grow that team because of the labor expense. But
it's getting close. I think it's getting closer. That's when I think that'll happen before we're selling full systems digitally. We'll be AI on the advances that are happening in the call center space with AI are really, really awesome. They're just like, they're still, it's like you can still tell it's not quite there, but man, it's getting close. So like give it another 6 months, 9 months maybe, and we'll be, hopefully we'll all be singing a different song on that one.
Yeah, I think that, one of my, you know, brother companies in our portfolio company is Nexa. And Nexa does answering service. And so I pay close attention because they're doing a lot of the after hours and the overflow and outbounding and stuff for our contractors. And they do a great, great job. So the AI testing, though, in it has been awesome. But it's still like just there that I'm like, man, if I'm maybe in the Midwest, maybe that don't fly. You know, like if it's something that throws me off, maybe it doesn't, you know, like I'm not going to do it. But it's so freaking close. It's so close. And listen,
do you think AI knows that bless your heart is really not bless your heart? You know what I mean? Like, that's the stuff that's missing, is like all that Southern stuff being from the South. But like, I don't think that means what I think you think that means.
No. And that's like, there's the intent. I don't think it actually knows that just yet. Right?
Not yet.
Your heart. Yeah. You don't say that. And you're not going to say that because they're like, okay. Yeah. Well, that's a great example. So I want to finish with this last question. We're like almost an hour into this thing already. But one just last question, because I'm, I can't remember. I think y'all had your meetings a couple months back. All right. When everyone kind of comes in and you meet, do you guys have something that's in the back half of the year too, or no? Where your different brands
get together? All of our brands?
Yeah.
Yeah. We're every 18 months. So we did one November last year. We'll do one, I think, February this coming year.
Got it. Okay. So part of what you have to be thinking through, or your team has to be thinking through, is like, what's next? Like, is there something on the horizon that you're thinking about, whether it's, you know, like a different service or offering or change, like whatever it is. But like, and by the way, if you say it, you're like, I don't want to say anything because I don't want anybody to hear it. Like, half people don't even know how to go after it.
No.
You know what I'm saying?
No, listen, I'm a firm believer. Like, the money isn't in the idea. The money is in the execution.
Execution, that's right.
So money's in the execution, right? Anybody can have a great idea. That's right. It's not hard, right? And you can get really excited about it. But getting it done is the hard part.
Absolutely. And you've always had the vision to do it, but then you've always executed on it. And that's kind of like, that's the pattern you've had for yourself. So I believe you. I know that you will execute. I just want to know, like, what's on your radar? And what's on your radar that you're paying attention to that you would love to be able to take to them, you know, in February?
Yeah. This is a really easy one. Easy idea, hard execution, which is why we're still working through it.
Ooh, this is going to be good. I'm excited.
Well, it ties back to the idea of like, you can maximize your existing customer base and like, you should be chasing revenue from that captive audience. Now imagine you sit in my seat and you have 16 brands, all with their own customer base, right? And like, that's where there's tremendous opportunity for any platform organization, right? It doesn't even have to be in home services, but any, you know, company that's got kind of separate customer databases, right? And it's, how do I get people to understand they can buy more than one service from us? How do I leverage what I know about a house and the house that someone's living in? And the person might move, right? But to me, my customer is the house. Now, I need to be able to speak the language of the person who's living there and meet them where they are and have ways for them to engage with us that work for them personally. But in some instances, I know more about your house than you do because we've been there for years before you were. So how do I leverage all of that information about the house, customer base, to drive a significant portion of our revenue growth via cross-selling across brands? That's the like North Star that I'm chasing right now. We've got some really exciting things that I'm hoping will be unveiled in February to that point. Some great tech we're looking at with some awesome partners. But that's the end all. And for a lot of our franchisees, right, who own plumbing, HVAC, electrical, they are proof that there's tremendous value to be leveraged there because they do it themselves in their own markets. So that's the thing that's my big North Star that I'm chasing.
I love it. Yeah. I love it. What are you going to say, Jeff?
I was just going to throw on there that I feel somewhat smart now because we have a similar idea, and I know Heather's really smart. So I'm like, oh, yes, this is great. But, you know, and I think the way that I would, just because I know kind of what our listener base looks like, they may be saying, well, I don't have all these other things like that I can cross sell. One thing that we're really looking at, and it kind of goes back to our conversation earlier, it's like, if a replacement HVAC lead is only getting more expensive, how do I go find a customer via other means where leads are cheaper? And so two of the things that we're looking at, so if you just have an HVAC business, two of the things that we're investigating right now are how can I kind of mobilize our duct cleaning operation, which has always been thought to be just some ancillary thing, like we offer it because we have to. But if I can go get a duct cleaning lead for a hell of a lot cheaper, more than likely that person has an older system and they're concerned about its functionality. And, you know, the other piece, and you mentioned it earlier, is filter sales. Can I go get a filter delivery customer where it's a actual tangible product? It's not a service. I don't have to fulfill it. I don't have to have manpower. Can I go grab a customer for very, very cheap and then again, start marketing the other services that I know are where my, you know, bread is buttered, HVAC replacement, a water heater, different things like that. Can I go build out this customer base? And then all of a sudden it goes back to what we were talking about earlier. All of a sudden they're now in my customer base. They know who I am and I get to spend far less money moving forward as opposed to trying to go get net new customers in the most expensive places possible. So I do think 100% agree with you, but I would just say that just on the backs of, you know, if you only got a plumbing company or you only got an HVAC company, you don't have all these other things. I think that there's still room to do it for sure.
Yeah, that's great. I think that's great advice. Finding a way to get someone in your database and thinking about what that looks like. And maybe that means that there's different economics you have to run on certain parts of the business, right? Like maybe that means there's a team who's dedicated to a certain service that maybe you had random kind of team members doing before ad hoc. Like there's ways to make pieces of the business that might appear to not be efficient, more efficient operationally, if you think about them in unique ways. So I think that's a great idea.
Yeah. And I think I'll tie this thing together with, you know, to me, I've always believed like anything that's paid should be your lever that you're trying to move up or down based on what you need, right? It doesn't need to be a constant because it is expensive, but if you need to fill a board, you fill a board, there's your lever. But you know, another thing you had said early on in this is, and Chad and I've talked about this and we've had these guys on, but trying to keep what we got, like even your existing customers, trying to keep what we got and stay close to them. And because nobody, like you said, they don't want to have to call you in the first place. If something comes up, it's because they broke it. Now you got to spend money on something you don't want to fix in the first place. It's not fun to spend money on those types of things. But you still, as a contractor, have the you have the responsibility of maintaining your customer base as best as possible and making yourself memorable, like you said. But like we brought on, you know, a guest from smartac.com, which was like a monitoring system that lets, you know, it recognizes as soon as something goes wrong, it's in, you know, and you know, Chad knows more about all the installation of it, stuff like that. Super easy for these guys to install. But the point is that as soon as something's off, it sends the contractor that something's off and needs to be checked before the homeowner even knows, which is fantastic customer service. So then in some of the, and how I heard about it was some of the other like big, you know, big players or customers that I've known, you know, were, you know, like talking about it. And I get pitched all kinds of shit all the time, but like, you know, and I've heard it all. It's just like, but that actually makes so much sense to me. Like how nice is it? And what kind of service can you provide as a contractor if you have that out working for you and it's easy to install? Well, that certainly helps make your customer base sticky. And it also makes your customer service stand out exceptionally. And it's all automated. Pretty cool. It's just another way that even if you're a one truck guy just trying to build your shit, that you can put in there that's easy, doesn't cost much to do it, or it's, you know, it's very, very inexpensive, easy to install, but makes you look like a rock star. Like those are simple things that we can do now, you know, to just make our businesses stand out. So I appreciate you guys. Heather, always fun. And I blew past an hour. I told you I would be done at the top of the hour. I totally missed it. Now I'm almost
past. This is a great conversation. Always fun to talk to you guys.
Past. And it's always, you know, I'm always interested to at least hear what's on your radar, like what's on the horizon for, because I know you got to be thinking, you have no choice but to think through all the different options and things for you to do for the brand. So I always appreciate
it. Oh, it's fun.
So
every dull moment.
Yeah, man, it's always a good time. And then we're going to do this again down the road and we're going to talk a little bit more about what you, you know, anything that you're doing, your woofy stuff, like whatever you're doing, you're learning. Cause I know that you're constantly kind of having to chase down and figure things out. And, so I'm going to keep staying connected to it. And by the way, like I'm excited to work, you know, obviously I'm excited for our relationship. We've known each other now. I think it's been like 8 years, 9 years, somewhere around there.
Yeah, so, a long time.
And I always appreciate your perspective. And Chad, thanks for chiming in with really thoughtful questions every once in a while. That's very nice of you.
I appreciate it. That was great. No, I would just say, and I know we're trying to close this out, but like listeners, if you didn't take at least 3 or 4 things from this conversation that you can go take back and implement, I know I have 3 or 4 written down. So Heather, I really appreciate you for your taking the time and sharing your knowledge, because I think we haven't released it yet, but I'm pretty sure we're going to help some people out for sure.
Love it.
Heather, how large is Authority Brands all in revenue?
$2.1 billion.
Listeners, $2.1 billion. She's tasked with making sure she figures out how to keep these things going.
My hairs are turning gray. Like as you're saying that, I can see just ping. I just got another gray hair. Thank you for that.
You're welcome. So, and also you're welcome, listeners, because talk about a wealth of knowledge. And it's always nice to hear a different perspective, not from a contractor, not from a digital agency, but somebody who's also responsible for all the things and at a monster scale too. So hopefully, like Chad said, you were able to write a few things down and take a few things away. As I always say to close this thing out, you don't got to do everything, but you got to do something. No 0 days.